This is the Author Archive podcast. I'm David Freeman, and my guest today is Rebecca Frayne, who has a book. Rebecca, this book seems to be a love letter to a place. You're not there at the moment, but do you love this place of which you write?
Well, I think that's a very fair description. I have had a house there for 23 years. I went with very low expectations. I had seen a house advertised locally for sale. I live in West London, and I was heavily pregnant, had put my back out, and I was walking down the high road in Chiswick and saw in the middle of an estate agent's very dusty window a pop of Mediterranean blue. And to my surprise, they were selling a tiny house in the north of Ibiza at a very modest sum. And it was being sold by a local couple who couldn't sell it in Ibiza because no one at that stage wanted to live in the north of Ibiza, which is the opposite end to the airport and to the clubs. So we flew out there, and I'd always thought it was an island of Sodom and Gomorrah. I always made a particular point that I was never going to go, that I would, I would pass many British tourists, vomiting drunkenly into the gutter. And so we arrived to see the house and discovered it seemed idyllic island. And I just thought perhaps this one area is the place. And so we bought the house, so we let it out as a small rental business so we could afford it. And every day I would venture a little further, and it just was a glorious island. And the clubbing scene turned out to be a very small aspect of it.
And
So
the
yes,
book,
I go.
The book is called Lost in Ibiza. Now,
yes.
I love going to Ibiza, and I stayed in a little place, San Miguel, and my favourite was sitting on the beach at, where is it that they used to drum?
Oh, Benaras.
At Benaras. And
Yes.
There's a little hotel, a little bar that has Czech tablecloths, and sitting there
Yes.
watching the sea. I
Yeah.
love it. Now,
Yes.
but it's different going for 2 to 3 weeks than living there. Now, I worried about the place, and you're a green activist now, aren't you? Are
Yes,
you
yes.
worried about it?
I am worried. I think one of the purposes of the book is to tell a story of a father and daughter who meet for the first time, and that's what's foregrounded. But the subtext is an environmental story. And it is a small island, as you know. You've obviously been there and know it well. It's 10 times the size of Manhattan. And so you see up close the changes. So the water table, the surface water all dried up 50 years ago when the hotels took off. So all those ecosystems were lost. I think about 15 years ago, they put in the first motorway on the island. There were huge protests. I mean, really very, very confrontational scenes. The protesters lost, and those motorways now cover certain sections of the south. You see all the environmental issues that beset the world, but distilled into this very small space.
Where I used to stay, the guy there explained that when the tourists come in, it's like being on a static cruise. They bring so much rubbish. Where does all the rubbish go? And the other thing is, he grew wonderful avocados. You have to water avocados. So where does all the water come from? It's a double-edged sword.
Yes, indeed. I mean, there are two, perhaps there's a third desalinization plant that's about to open. That's not an environmental answer. They're extracting salt from the seawater and then putting the salt back into the sea, which then creates, death spots for all the marine life. The water, they say, will be the new oil. And I can see that happening in Ibiza. It's in the middle of a drought at the moment, even though it's very, very early in the season. There has been no rain this winter. So, it was with some trepidation. I mean, I have a beautiful regenerative farm there, and we have a sense of foreboding about what it's going to look like in 10 years, 20 years.
Okay, that's the background. And this story is about a young woman. She's 21, and
yes.
She's been at Cambridge, and she drops out. Her name is Alice. Tell me about her.
So Alice was inspired I did a lot of environmental activism in the old-fashioned sense of placards. 15 years ago, I co-founded a group called We Can, Climate Action Now. And I met a lot of young environmental activists, and I really, really wanted to explore the courage, you know, that my children, I used to take my sons and my daughter, who were very small, along for the protests, and inadvertently radicalized my two eldest sons, who are now environmental activists themselves, and one of them was arrested for Extinction Rebellion protest. So I spent a lot of time in court watching the activists he'd been arrested with try to defend themselves, and I was really moved by their courage and the fact that they were willing to put their liberty on the line, and I wanted to explore that in a fictional forum.
Okay, so tell me more about Alice then.
So Alice, yes. Alice is, has been brought up by a man that she believed to be her father. Her mother has died when she was very young. And when she's 21, he sits her down and says, "Actually, I have to tell you that I'm not your biological father." So that sends her on a journey. She has been an environmental activist for some years, and she goes out to Ibiza to meet her father, her biological father, on the cusp of his 50th birthday, and discovers that they have a deep ideological divide. He is a property developer. He is very ostrich-like in his he like many people, is aware of environmental issues, but chooses to believe that somehow they'll be resolved without any input or commitment from him. And so you have this fundamental ideological divide. So she is young and passionate and very frustrated by the man she discovers.
Do you know this man? Is he based on reality?
I know many men like him. I mean, I think it's a study of moral myopia. And I think that for all of us have a degree of that. I think we're all overwhelmed by the scale of the issues on so many fronts, but the climate crisis is the largest and the most overwhelming. And I guess sometimes it's easier just to avert our eyes. But I suppose the book is trying to tease out the fact that we are all implicated, so there is no ducking it.
Back in the story, how does this attractive, slightly tall woman, how does she find out that the little guy she's been calling dad all her life isn't? And how does she know that William, the slightly ideologically dodgy bloke, is her dad? How does she find these things out?
Her father is a very sweet, the man she believes was her father, sweet, creative man, but who feels morally obliged. She's always known that he's not her biological father, and he sits her down once she turns 21. He thinks it's her right to know. And actually, it was a story inspired by Martin Amis, who also discovered he had a daughter who was born out of wedlock, to use a very old-fashioned phrase, who turned up when she was 21, Delilah, to meet him. And I was fascinated by it, and as I wrote it, actually discovered that four of my friends either had a child who turned up, or had a brother or sister that turned up out of the blue, and that it was not as uncommon as one might think.
And your Alice, the fact that she's not biologically from this bloke, does it affect her worldview? Does it affect who she thinks she is?
That's a good question. I think we meet her in literally within weeks of, certainly months of her making this discovery. So I think what the book takes place over 4 days, and I think that we are seeing her trying to process something that has fundamentally swept her feet from under her. I read a lot about people in the situation, and they all describe the loss of identity, of having thought that the world was one way, and suddenly the whole sense of identity is fragmented. So I try to explore that.
But of course, the other question is, conception could have happened before this man William meets his present wife. That could have been the case.
Yes, indeed. And I there is a moment in the book where she decides that perhaps it all has been a terrible error, that perhaps her mother made actually deceived her, the man who raised her, or made a mistake. And we'll never know that for sure, but she realizes that this man, who she thinks is her biological father, has an identical eye color. And I think there's enough that they have in common that she has a horrible belief that he is, although she doesn't wish for him to be her biological father.
But William's new wife does a bit of basic arithmetic.
Oh,
She does.
yes. Sorry, yes. So I mean, it's an unpacking of secrets and lies, and so that's absolutely right. That William's wife, who is very humiliated that this young woman has turned up, she's organizing a lavish party. They've got house guests. She wanted everything to be perfect, and this interloper has come, and she has a very dark suspicion that actually this was a young woman conceived when she had met William, and she goes to Alice's room and gets her passport and discovers indeed that the dates suggest unequivocally that her husband was unfaithful to her. And so that obviously sends explosions that ripple throughout the book.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about living in Ibiza, because the Ibiza I knew was all drumming at sunset and hippie markets and things. But I mean, there's dark things happening in the night and new chemical substances being introduced, of which I knew absolutely nothing. So is there a new subculture?
There are so many subcultures in Ibiza. So the hippies, as you described, the clubbers, obviously famously much covered in the tabloids, the Russian oligarchs who flood there in the summer in the south to as a kind of playground. A very wealthy section which is represented in my book. A very counterculture section. It's where people went to, as you know, escape Franco. It's where people went to dodge the Vietnam War. So the kind of counterculture has always thrived there. And then, of course, there are the Ibisenkos, whose island it is, who lived there for hundreds of years. And what's fascinating about them is they don't speak Spanish and they don't even speak Catalan. They speak Ibisenko. So they're very much their own tribe. But the new subculture, actually, interestingly, is this thriving regenerative farming movement, of which I'm part. And that is a wonderful aspect. So during lockdown, five or six, seven, eight regenerative farms sprouted like beautiful mushrooms. And so we are all now working in collaboration.
So, what does that actually mean in practice, regenerative? What's different?
So no pesticides, no artificial fertilizers, cherish the soil, work in harmony with nature. Most of them would be planting biodynamically. That means planting with the waxing and waning of the moon. And then it's very community orientated. So you trade within the community. It's a local circular economy. So what Ibiza was completely self-sufficient until the 1950s, and the whole hospitality industry, opens up. And now Ibiza only grows 2% of its own food. It's the most beautiful, lush, fertile island, and it means that it's very, the systems that support it are very fragile. And in lockdown, that became very apparent. Would the boats carry on coming from the mainland?
The very first famous person that I became aware of who moved there was a film actor called Terry Thomas,
Oh yeah.
who lived up in the hills with a son improbably called Cushion, who looked after where they used to live as a sort of hotel. I mean, what's it like living there now? Can you keep your integrity? Can you keep your moral code? Can you keep your optimism? Does it work?
It's a very good question. I think we live in the north, and the north is we live in the mountains, so it's geographically very distinct. My book is called Lost in Ibiza because you genuinely can, and people do get lost. If you lose your sense of navigation, you can walk for a very long while through up and down mountains, through valleys, and not see anyone. And so I think there's it's possible to escape, but then within 20 minutes, if you head south, you're going to hit motorways and you're going to hit very bad sprawling urbanisation. So one of the things that I hope to capture in the book was this incredible polarities that are so cheek by jowl with one another. So I keep my optimism when I'm in the wild woolly north. When I go south, my spirits sink.
I can understand that place. What's it called? San Antonio.
Yes,
I
San
mean,
Antonio.
I think that's where the devil lives. I once went to what's the club with cherries, which is that one,
Pasha.
Pasha. That really is Hades. It really is. So, where do you go for fun? I mean, I appreciate your idealism, your youthful idealism, and your children. You've passed it on to them. But there isn't a lot of places to go, is there? It's a tiny place.
Well, actually, interestingly, I think that the polarization between North and South has really heightened. So in the North, where we live, there are amazing small acoustic concerts, folk-based. There are sweat lodges in the middle of hidden forests. Ayahuasca is a huge thing. So through the night ceremonies and teepees, which are off the radar.
What does that mean? I don't know. You're using foreign language, Rebecca.
Ayahuasca is from South America, tree vine. It's a hallucinogenic. It's not used as a recreational drug, but as a healing drug to heal trauma, to give insight into the soul. I have never taken it myself, but I am unusual. I'm surrounded by people that do. And they often will fly in a shaman from Peru who will oversee the ceremonies. So it's quite out there.
Yes, I'm just thinking. I mean, hippies, I understood, but this, they do still drum on the beach, don't they?
They do. Benaras is thriving. I mean, what happened? It was a Sunday night festival, and so many tourists began to turn up that they shifted to different nights to try and avoid the whole
Yeah.
club 18 to 30, people gawping. But yes, very much so. I mean, the whole counterculture is absolutely thriving there, and that's what I adore. That's what I'm in love with, the Alice in Wonderland nature of the island.
Now, I haven't revealed what happens at the end of the book because I haven't read the last 20 pages, so I don't know. So
Correct.
who is your reader, do you think?
Well, I think it's a cross-generational book. So I think what's interesting about it is that it's four different perspectives. One is a 21-year-old environmental activist, Alice, we've talked about. The second is her father, who's turning 50, who is an affluent man who's in denial about the state of the world. The third is his wife, Cressida, who is highly strung and rather lost in the turbulence. And the fourth is their Filipino housekeeper, and that's a risky perspective to represent because, of course, some people will talk about cultural appropriation. But she's an economic migrant; she's left her own daughter behind in the Philippines, and for me, she is the moral heart of the book.
Is there a movie in this, do you think? Or at least a Netflix series?
That's a very good question. I am currently writing a screenplay for the British Film Institute, so I very much hope so. I write screen when I'm not writing novels, I write screenplays. I had a film that came out just before lockdown with starring Keira Knightley. I very much hope that this will also reach the cinema. And I think it's got a kind of White Lotus flavour of deconstructing affluence and looking at the intersectionality of different viewpoints.
Well, Lost in Ibiza is now out, and it's the new novel from Rebecca Frayn. Rebecca, thank you very much for talking to me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.